Welcome to Raising Playful Tots. Raising Playful Tots is a weekly podcast about mums making the most of early years playtime. I'm your host, Melissa. Welcome to the play space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids of ours. You have children under 5 years old? This is the podcast for you. Introduce a new play idea. Welcome to another episode of Raising Playful Tots. Glad you could stop by today. If you're new to the show, welcome. And hi to the regular playmates. There's plenty of room on the floor here as we play Guess Who with the Duplo. Last week's show, I shared an interview with Keris of Rainy Day Mum about baby and toddler play activities, especially if you have a newborn and a new toddler big brother or big sister. So if you've missed that one, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at www.raisingplayfultots.com/shows. This week's show is all about Montessori. I'm talking to Barbara Isaacs, Montessori trainer and director, author also, from montessori.org.uk. This is the second in the series in looking at play approaches. We looked at Steiner and Waldorf play back in episode number 20. The general question today is the Montessori approach right for my child? I hope you'll stick around to find out. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing with your friends. Thanks. I'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, this is Angelique Felix from angeliquefelix.com. I'm leaving a message to tell you how much I enjoyed listening to Keris from Rainy Day Mom, but also listening to Ellie from No Time for Flashcards. It's great to hear my fellow bloggers and my friends talk about play, since we all retain how important play is for our children to learn in a fun way. Thank you again for the inspiration that you give us and for the time that you put inside to spread around the importance of play. Have a lovely day. Bye.
Today I'm talking to Barbara Isaacs, Academic Director of Montessori Center International, MCI. She's also the author of Bringing the Montessori Approach to Your Early Years Practice and recently published Understanding the Montessori Approach, Early Years Education in Practice. She's been a proprietor of a Montessori nursery, trainer of Montessori teachers, as well as a senior accreditation officer for the Montessori Accreditation and Evaluation Board. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Most families simply play with their children and they don't really know that they're playing in a particular style, but there are so many well-known styles and types of play. We've talked in a previous show about Waldorf and Steiner play. However, today we're talking about a play style we're likely to have heard a little bit about, maybe we've seen a school around, and we might even know friends that are playing with their children in this style. Can you explain what Montessori is and how we would recognize it?
Montessori education was developed at the beginning of the 20th century by an Italian doctor who initially worked with children with special educational needs. And it was the observation of these children which made her reflect on what would play and learning look like if she worked with children who were normal, who were like any other child. And she was given an opportunity to explore her ideas in 1907, when she was asked to set up a nursery school in very impoverished part of Rome, where the owners of the new buildings wanted to get the children off the streets. Initially, she had no toys to speak of, and she engaged the children in everyday tasks For example, she taught them how to wash themselves, how to eat with knife and fork, how to fold their clothes, because she felt she needed skills which would help them in being independent, because all of them have come from large families and their parents were very busy doing jobs outside the home. She found that the children really enjoy these activities well. She found that the children needed to have these skills in order to be independent, and she observed their engagement with them, and the children really, really enjoyed being able to do things for themselves. She also introduced some of the activities or materials which she used with the children with special educational needs, focusing primarily on activities which would develop or enhance their sensorial experiences. And so that was the foundation of the Montessori approach. Later on, the mothers were so happy with their children's progress that they asked Montessori to teach them how to read and write, because as in today's world, mothers feel or parents feel that children's academic skills are the route to success in life. And Montessori developed a literacy and numeracy program for which she is really known today. And gradually over the period of time, there was more emphasis in the Montessori approach on learning rather than playing. On the other hand, when we train our students today in the beginning of the 21st century, we are looking at how we can help young children build on the skills that are available to them through the engagement with the Montessori activities, and how to engage with them in extending their thinking, in helping them to problem solve, in developing their creative activities. In terms of what parents can do with their children, I think that the most important thing is to give children time to do things for themselves. So, for example, when a two-year-old insists on brushing his own teeth, that you give them a chance to do it for themselves before doing it for them. When the toddler wants to feed him or herself, that we give them a spoon for them to be able to do it on their own. When children want to dress themselves, they are able to do it for themselves. And it is these skills of independence which initially take time and patience because they are not very efficient, which will build the children's self-esteem, self-efficacy. If they can do things they want to do for themselves, they feel they are good at something, and that will underpin all the other activities and social engagement that the children may have later.
So who would benefit from this type of approach?
Any child would benefit from this type of approach, because it is looking, the adult should see the child as a competent individual who, given time and space, will develop lots of skills which will make them efficient human beings, but which will also serve as the basis for creative development. We have found these children in a Manchester primary school where they have introduced the Montessori approach at the foundation stage level with nursery and reception age children, that it was the order of the Montessori classroom which contributed significantly to their learning and benefited them in their approach to learning, because that order gave them a sense of control, because many of these children have come from very chaotic backgrounds. So, and possibly this was one of the benefits that Montessori offered to the children in the slums of Rome, was the order and the structure of the day, which gave them a feeling of knowing what to expect, gave them feeling of predictability and control, and therefore opportunities to engage freely with the environment because they were not going to be interrupted.
It's interesting that you mentioned the primary age, you know, 5, 6, 7 year olds, because ordinarily I'm familiar with hearing Montessori talked about with the younger age children. So it's interesting to see that these principles can carry on through early years and into school as well.
Well, Montessori education has got a structure from all the way from birth to 18. In Britain, it is well established in the nursery age group of children. But in fact, on the continent and in the United States, Montessori schools tend to operate from 1 to 11 or 12, or sometimes go all the way up to 16 and 18. In an ideal world, if we didn't have to be constrained by the UK legislation and funding for nursery education and compulsory education starting at 5, an ideal Montessori nursery would be for 3 to 6 year olds. So it would be the, like on the continent, where children go to a kindergarten between 5 and 6, where they have an opportunity to get ready for their more formal education, which will start from 6 to or at 7 years of age.
What basic resources would you recommend for parents if they wanted to start a Montessori type play?
I think that the best resources would be playing with the children outside, so going for walks, going into playgrounds, using what is available. You don't need to have any specialist equipment in order to follow the child in the Montessori way. You would also be well advised to engage the child in helping you to cook, helping you to garden, generally be part of the everyday life of the household, sitting down reading books together, maybe playing this small world play. I'm not a huge advocate of making Montessori type environment, trying to duplicate what the Montessori nursery school offers to children. I very much believe that if you respect and trust the child's ability to learn, the benefit of engaging with an adult, having conversations, exploring together, playing lotto, playing, doing puzzles, building things together, all of those activities will be beneficial to the child as long as the adult is really engaged, really listens to what the child says and responds appropriately to the child's interests.
Today I'm talking to Barbara Isaacs, Academic Director of Montessori Centre International. To find out more about Montessori, you can visit her website, or the website, at www.montessori.org.uk. Barbara, what would we see in a Montessori early years classroom?
In a Montessori early years classroom, you would see all the equipment laid out on open shelves at child level, each piece of material, each activity being presented in a box or in a basket and being self-contained. So if the child chooses something on the shelf, they can take it to a table, or they can take a mat and work with it on the floor, but they will have everything they need in the basket or in the box. And when they are finished, they are expected to put it back on the shelf. The areas of learning that are organized on the open shelves would be activities of everyday living, which will teach the child skills like folding or opening and closing boxes or bottles, or learning to transfer things, or learning to pour. So there's lots of fine motor movement which will be beneficial for later academic learning, but the main purpose is to give the child the skill of being independent. You will also find the sensorial shelves, which will have activities like color boxes, where children match and pair color shapes, exploring geometric solids or flat shapes, comparing sizes of cubes or prisms. They will also explore textures, some weights, and they will explore sound. So that's the basis. The activities of everyday living and the sensorial activities are the foundation of the Montessori nursery. And these activities give the child the skills to perhaps be introduced to more academic learning, like early literacy or early numeracy. But in Montessori classrooms, we also have an area traditionally called cultural area, which is akin to knowledge and understanding of the world in the early years curriculum. Their children learn about plants, animals, the world in general. Very early on, we introduced children to the whole world, to the continents, how people live, and through the cultural activities, we hope to nurture understanding of the environment, respect for the environment, and hopefully learning about other cultures, and therefore kind of sowing seeds for peaceful coexistence in the world, because Montessori was very keen to introduce awareness of the whole world rather than just focusing on becoming nurturing nationalistic feelings in the children, because she felt that this was the way how we could find some solutions to the world problems.
Right. You've painted a very exciting picture of what Montessori can hold for us. If we now, as parents, are looking for a good Montessori school, how would we know that we've found one? What are the good things to look for?
What a challenge. I think that the easiest way, or the best way to start, is perhaps to look what earlier provision is available in your neighborhood. If there is a Montessori school, go and visit. As a parent myself, I always went by my gut feeling. So my first question was, would my child be happy here? Can I picture my child in this environment? The Montessori classroom will not be as exciting visually as mainstream nursery school, because we don't over-decorate walls, we don't hang things from the ceiling, we don't put things on the windows, because we feel it is the shelves and the equipment on the shelves and the toys on the shelves that should speak to the child. Generally speaking, the classroom should be calm. The children should be engaged in all sorts of activities, so they would not be sitting in a group being talked to. They will be doing things. They should be playing inside the classroom and also have access to outdoor activities which are planned and organized for the children, so that they get rich experiences regardless if they are inside or outside. The children should be polite to one another, and the adults should be calmly spoken, moving graciously around the classroom, and generally being very positive social role models for the children.
So if we decided that we want to try some Montessori-type activities at home, are there any things that you might recommend just as a starter to get people motivated in the Montessori way?
Buy a shelf and put the child's toys on the shelf, not in a toy box, so that the child can see what they want. If they want a car, they know where to find it. If they want their dolly, they know it will be sitting in the pram next to the shelf. If they want books, they know where to find them within the child's reach. Equally, maybe have a little chest where they can find some of their clothes. They can choose to wear, not too much, because too much choice can be quite confusing for some children. In the living room, have a chair with a basket of books next to the chair if you would like the child to perhaps sit down with you and share a book. In the kitchen, have a low table where the child can eat if they are ready for a snack. Make sure that they know where to find their plate and a saucer. These should be also accessible to the children, so they can set their own table or help you to set the table for the family. So basically, think about the child as you are organizing your environment, not in terms of, I need to have a pink nursery with the latest stuff from the designer shop, but in terms of, how could I make this an environment which will be comfortable for my child, which will encourage them to be independent? But in fact, we have just, the Montessori St. Nicholas Charity have just published a book called Learning Together, which is written for parents and gives lots and lots of ideas about how parents could make their home more child-friendly without buying huge amount of expensive activities or materials or furnishing really expensive nursery for their children.
Oh, where would we find that book?
If parents look at our website, it will be possible to order copies from our shop.
Perfect. Well, today I've been talking to Barbara Isaacs, director, trainer and author from the Montessori Centre International in London. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'll be right back after this short break.
This is Ashley Merriman, author of Nurture Shock, and you're listening to Raising Playful Tots.
Welcome back to the show. I hope now you've got some good information about Montessori, enough to be looking further into this type of approach. I'm curious if you've had this Montessori discussion already, and if your children are going to Montessori schools. Let us know by coming over to Facebook and leaving your experiences of Montessori. You can find us on Facebook at Raising Playful Tots, all one word. Talking of feedback, we had a voicemail that you heard earlier there from Angelique all about show number 91 with Ali of No Time for Flashcards. Thanks, Angelique, for your feedback. If you want to leave feedback like she did by voicemail, then just pop on over to Raising Playful Tots, and on the sidebar there on the right-hand side, there's a bright tab that says Send Voicemail. So no more dial-up, no more charges. It's free from the website. You can leave a message. You just click the button and start speaking, and I can play back your comment and hear what you have to say. At the beginning of nearly every show, I've been adding a little new play activity to do at home, and I use the phrase something like plenty of room at the, and then I add a play activity briefly. This week I said plenty of room on the floor playing Guess Who with all the Duplo, which was a big nod to a fellow play blogger, Emma, of the brilliant blog mummymummymummymum.com, where she has a fun post on Guess Who and Lego. I won't say any more. You'll have to go and see it. I'm sure the kids will absolutely love this particular game. And I had a thought. How about if you, as the listeners, want to add your activities into that section? You call your idea in and I'll say it on the show. A new one each week, say. I can mention your name and your country or state or city or whatever it is that you would like me to say. You tell me. And then I'll say it on the show. I think it would be fun. It also gives you something to say on the voicemail. Because I know from experience, when I've called into voicemail, I can be stuck on what to say. So now you can send in feedback. You can send in show suggestions, comments about previous shows like Angelique did this week. You can also talk about how the show has helped you. And you can also do the ending of the sentence, plenty of room, and give an activity that either you've done or an activity that you've heard of. Because I know that you have one idea right now you can think of, like, yeah, I've got an idea. Don't delay. Nip on over to raisingplayfultots.com and record it right now. It'll just take you seconds to do it. I'm really looking forward to seeing what you guys have to offer. I think it will be fun. I've created a post of my 16 favourite early childhood play collaborative boards on Pinterest. Ooh, try saying that five times fast this week. So if you're looking for some play activity inspiration, you can see that list on the Play Activities blog. I really hope that you're having a playful week. You're managing to get things done and take some action in your play life. Thank you for downloading and listening to the show today. And a big, big thanks to Born Barbara, who left an iTunes review saying, I always find myself listening to this podcast of an evening when I decide to stay up late and get some things done. It's so great to get inspired about playing with my three boys in this way. Always a great interview or resource to learn about. Thanks for the podcast, Melitza. Thank you. And yay, another mum of three boys. You know, I do a lot of my podcast listening in the evening too. Well, the weather is glorious and the kids will be home soon, and I can see a long ride in my future with a little boy and a balance bike and trying to chase him down before he gets to the road. So I need to get on out of here and go play. All the links, the websites, the books, everything we talked about in the show today, you'll find that by visiting raisingplayfultots.com/92. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 92. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye!